The public first got to know Carla Hall when she was a contestant on Bravo's Top Chef and Top Chef All-Stars. Today, she's the co-host of the ABC talk show The Chew, and she has written her first cookbook. In Carla's comfort foods, favorite dishes from around the world, she takes classic American dishes like chicken noodle soup or peas and potatoes and gives them a new twist by adding international flavors. It's published by Atria Books, and I'm very pleased it has brought Carla Hall to our show today. Hello.
Hi. Thank you for having me.
Now, you could have chosen many different approaches for a first cookbook.
Well, this is my second cookbook.
Oh, it is your second. Okay.
So Comfort Food That Hugs You was my first one, and it was primarily Southern food, sort of a biography of my life.
Because you grew up in Nashville?
Yes, home of the Grand Ole Opry and the Titans. And this one is my second book, and I decided to focus on comfort foods from around the world to show how similar as people we are.
And comfort foods are similar around the world? Everybody is having mac and cheese no matter where?
No, I think that if you take chicken with milk gravy, and that's kind of like a stewed dish, but if you take out the milk and you add sour cream and paprika, you could be in Hungary. Mm-hmm. Or if you take out the milk and you add tomatoes, habanero peppers, and bananas, you could be in West Africa. Or if you take out the milk and you add heavy cream, Dijon mustard, white wine, and tarragon, you can be in where?
Provence.
Right, Provence. So that's the idea. And to celebrate how we are very similar as people, but to also celebrate the differences and our uniqueness.
And same foods become different things in different parts of
exactly
the world.
Right.
For example, cornmeal.
Right. Polenta, you know.
It's grits in the South.
Exactly right.
And in Mexico, I forgot what it's called, but it's a wonderful dish, especially when they put mushrooms in it.
Mm-hmm.
But how would you define comfort food?
I think it's the foods that we have in the home kitchens. I think it's the foods that build our food memories and that were made when we're sitting around the table in our home kitchens with our grandparents, our parents. I stopped saying mom and grandma because I know plenty of grandfathers and fathers cook.
Do some people get upset when they discover that you've revamped them? Aren't current comfort foods delicious to us because they're familiar?
Yes, absolutely. And I've revamped them in a way that is my palate. For instance, a really good example is the Callaloo, which is a spinach and coconut stew that I do in the book. And my brother-in-law is from Liberia, and they have their version of Callaloo. And I worked in the Bahamas, and they have their version of Callaloo. But the thing is, my palate is American. And if I were to remake a dish, I wanted to make it based on my palate, that, you know, with taste that I like. So I don't use the saltfish. And I actually spoke to a woman recently who's from Jamaica. She's like, that's okay that you changed it, but I would use blue crab instead of the king crab legs. And I said, that's fine. But what I want to encourage people to do, and what I have done, is to take spices from a region and replace them for another dish and make it your own.
Because that is a problem sometimes. A recipe will have a spice, fenugreek or something like
right,
that.
Right, right.
And yeah, you could find it at a specialty store. But if you want to make the dish and you go to your local supermarket, it ain't there. So you have to find something that's going to be similar enough or at least work well with the other ingredients.
That's right. And so what I did with an international spice chart that I have here in the book, I took the different regions and I gave you the aromatics, which are the fresh ingredients. I gave you the fresh herbs, the spices, and whatever miscellaneous ingredients would make that cuisine unique. And the idea was that all of the ingredients that I'm using in that spice chart are approachable and things that you can find in your regular grocery store. You don't have to go to a specialty market. And I think that's what makes people intimidated about international cooking.
Well, you also say that all techniques are learnable by anyone?
Yes, I think so. And as a chef and
chopping fast like a chef without cutting my fingers?
But you don't have to chop fast to have the dinner. You chop fast to get it to the table quicker. So whether you chop fast or slowly, you know, the end result could possibly be the same.
My guest is Carla Hall, who, with Genevieve Coe, has written Carla's Comfort Food, Favorite Dishes from Around the World. It is published by Atria Books. American comfort. Oh, first of all, I'm curious about where your catchphrase, hootie-hoo, comes from.
That is a phrase that my husband and I would do when we were out and we can't find each other. It's a two-part call. So if I say hootie, you would respond who, because, and I would find you somewhere. You know.
So this is when you're in a large supermarket, for example.
Yes.
Or
yes.
Costco.
Or Costco, and you can't find somebody. You know. But we actually say it to each other when we're coming home. So if there's somebody at home, and the second person who walks through the door, it's like hootie, and you say, where are you in the house? Who? Yeah.
American comfort food is known for being full of bubbling butter and cheese,
right.
Not necessarily the healthiest ingredients. Is that true in other cultures as well?
No, I actually think other cultures, the food is a lot lighter. I think, but I think that our food started out that way, where people were cooking from scratch. They were cooking from their gardens. And even though you have, of course, a lot of fat back and pork and cheese and all of that goodness in Southern comfort food, it's not just that. And I think in other cultures, really the spices, the combination of spices is what makes it unique. And that's what I want people to take away here.
Well, you write about walking through food markets in other parts of the world and coming upon exciting different fruits mm-hmm. and vegetables. Unfortunately, you can't always put them in your pocket and bring them back
right.
to New York.
It's true, but what you can do when you're traveling is to talk to people at the farmer's market. I think when you talk to people about what dishes they love, you learn more about that person than to ask them, hey, how are you doing today?
Mm-hmm.
You learn so much about them. So to have a woman in the market and she's talking to you about some ingredient that you don't know, and you say to her, could you tell me how you use this in a dish? And just to watch that person come alive and share with you what she does in her kitchen is very magical.
Well, you include a chart in the beginning of your book that groups spices by
mm-hmm.
region. Why is geography important?
I think geography is important. I mean, when you think about the spice route and how, and without even getting into all of that, how cinnamon goes through so many different cultures, cumin goes through so many different cultures. And when you look at the spice chart and you see cinnamon and cumin and coriander and curry, even though curry is a blend, all of these individual spices we know, but it's how those cultures put them together that makes them unique.
And something like paprika can have a number of different national names before it.
Yes, yes. Hot paprika, sweet paprika.
Hungarian.
Hungarian, yes.
But you also say that there are only so many different techniques to cook a chicken, mm-hmm. so that's why spices and seasonings are so important.
Yes. So I think a lot of people, most people know how to roast a chicken. Most people know how to do a chicken stew. So I think if you take the dish that you already know how to make and then you kind of challenge yourself to change those spices based on, really you can go to the international spice chart that I have in my book, to change that dish. And you become more comfortable. And even smelling spices, if you smell it and you like it, 9 times out of 10, you're going to like to eat it.
When would you use fresh and when would you use dried herbs and spices?
I try to use fresh, but there is a place for dried herbs. For instance, if I'm doing a smoked salmon or if I am doing a rub, I might use dry because the fresh will burn. And sometimes you want the base of the note to be dry, and then you're going to finish with fresh right at the very end, so you have that different freshness.
And sometimes you have no choice. You just have to use the dried stuff. Because you can't get the fresh one.
Right. But I want to remind people, when you're using the dried, one, they don't last forever. And two, right before you use it, pinch your herbs to reactivate those oils so that you can actually smell
pinch them.
So rub them between your fingers. And if you smell them and they don't smell like the herbs and you pinch them and they don't smell like anything, they're too old. Throw it out.
On the other hand, sometimes you only need a little bit of rosemary, and you go to the store and they give you these things with a plastic wrap around
yes.
it. You have more rosemary than you're going to need for 3 months.
I know. And this is why I love that a lot of stores will actually sell you the spices in bulk, because if you don't use something all the time, you don't have to buy a big container of it.
Now, one place's comfort food is the next person's. Oh, my God, I can't stand this.
Yes.
And I have been in restaurants mm-hmm. Where the waiters have warned me, I don't think you're going to like that. So should we just simply try to eat the same thing that we always eat? Where is the line between being adventurous and having to eat something that tastes totally disgusting to us?
I think that you can't get away from your palate. And I said, like, my palate is American. I know what things I like. I like sour. I like salty. I like sweet. I can take bitter if it is paired with other things. And I think when you know your palate, if someone is telling you about a particular ingredient and you say, well, is that sweet? Is it sour? You know, how does it taste? Then you can kind of judge whether or not you're going to like it or not.
We have posted one of your recipes, Last Supper Buttered Tarragon Peas, on our show page. Why did you call it the Last Supper?
Because
feeling religious at the moment?
When I was on Top Chef, and one of the challenges was the Last Supper, and this was the challenge with Jacques Pepin, and his wish for his Last Supper was squab and peas. And I got so excited because I love peas. And I was probably just as excited about making peas as I was for cooking for Jacques Pepin.
Weren't scared making a French dish for a man who is a master of French cooking?
No, because I know that if I love something and I am doing it based on my palate and I am literally giving you the love in a dish, and that's what I did.
And with peas, we're often told that we can use frozen peas. It's the same as fresh peas. That's not true for most other things.
It's
Why
not.
Peas?
I think peas, I think corn, a vegetable that is picked at the peak of freshness, and that freshness is locked into that ingredient or that vegetable, and it's frozen. Because frozen peas will be a lot better than an old fresh pea that's starchy and has lost a lot of its flavor.
Now, you were on Top Chef, which is a terribly stressful situation.
Yes.
I suspect that some very good cooks failed simply because they couldn't handle the stress.
I think that's right. I did it twice. I did season 5, Top Chef New York, and season 8, Top Chef All Stars. And I think the show, everybody could cook. I mean, everybody that competes on Top Chef can cook, but it's whether or not you can maintain your stress and how you actually don't internalize. And I know for me, one of the big things was I don't want to be judged. That's sort of my lesson in life. And so here I am on a show that I'm being judged, and I had to give that up.
Just one more thing. The Columbian Exchange led to all sorts of foods coming from the Americas to Europe and vice and back. I can't imagine a European cooking without corn, tomatoes, potatoes, chocolate, vanilla, all coming from the Americas. Is that one of the reasons that we do share certain tastes in comfort foods?
I think so. When we mix as people and we're sharing, when you have people over to your home and you're giving them a piece of what you love, and that sharing, and that person takes them like, oh, wow, I've never had grits before. I love grits now. So. I think absolutely.
And you have a cookie company now?
I have a cookie company, Carla Hall Petite Cookies, and I brought you some. Our cookies are the size of sugar cubes, if you can imagine. And we have sweet and savory flavors.
And there's a cheddar pecan.
Sounds like
an interesting thing. I can understand Mexican chocolate chip, but cheddar works well in a cookie?
Cheddar works well. Well, you know, my idea of a cookie, it's a shortbread, and in the South, you have those cheddar coins. And so it's aged cheddar, pecans, and a little bit of cayenne pepper. Great with beer, great with wine.
Are comfort foods in the South the same as comfort foods in New England?
Nope. They're totally different.
But you try to include them all.
I try to include them all. I do not put sugar in my cornbread and still love it.
Carla Hall's book, Carla's Comfort Food, written with Genevieve Coe, Favorite Dishes from Around the World, published by Atria Books. Thank you so much for being on our show.
This has been such a pleasure. Thank you.